Okay, good evening, everyone. Welcome to Road Recovery Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Leroy, and I'm an alcoholic. This is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. In support of AA singleness of purpose, we respectfully ask that sharing be confined to alcoholics, and that when discussing our problems, we confine ourselves to those problems as they relate to alcoholism. There may be visitors here who are unfamiliar with our tradition of anonymity. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. This tradition is a constant reminder that personal ambition has no place in AA. We are sure that anonymity is the greatest safeguard AA can ever have. We therefore seek your cooperation in protecting the anonymity of our members at the public level. The format of tonight's meeting will be 3 10-minute speakers, followed by a 4th speaker until approximately 8:30. The meeting will then be open to the floor and close at 9 o'clock. Now, could everyone please turn off their mobile phones or switch them to a silent profile? And please try to keep disruptions to a minimum. Our final speaker tonight is Wayne.
Evening, everyone. My name's Wayne and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you for the first 3 speakers. And while I'm here, thank my sponsor, Bob, and my previous sponsors, in particular, Clancy and David B, who are both up in the meeting in the sky currently. And I'd like to thank Alex, who's been walking the road 28 years with me. So thanks, Alex. And if you're new, it says in the big book, regardless of your current circumstances, you will presently live in a new and wonderful world. That is what is on offer here. Whatever your current circumstances, if you do what we have done, you will presently live in a new and wonderful world. And I was not in a world like that when I came here, believe me. I mean, I was just full of fear. I couldn't speak to people. I was just desperately unhappy, full of just suicidal thoughts, just desperately unhappy. I mean, it was just that emotional turmoil and conflict that was constantly just stabbing me in the head. It was just awful. And the only thing that ever made that okay was the sense of ease and comfort which comes instantly by taking a few drinks. It's just the crack of that bottle of vodka or a ping of a can of Super Tenants, and I instantly felt better. It just made things so much easier. You know, I mean, I just preferred being drunk than sober. I preferred seeing life through a drunken haze, just one step removed from everybody else. Something between me and the world, and it was just better. Who wouldn't want to drink? I mean, being sober was difficult. It was just painful. And unfortunately, I mean, it says in the big book, again, it says, if you cannot control the amount you'll take of drink. And every time I try to quote the big book, you know the one I'm talking about, you know. If you can't control your drinking, or if you look at that one. Well, this was me. I mean, there was one day in particular. It was, they told me in work, Wayne, do not drink today. And I took a drink, as you do. And by the end of the day and into the night, I was fighting with my dad. On the way home, he was driving the car, and it was a fast road, and we went past a pub, and I needed another drink, and he would not stop, so I leant over and I tried to strangle him, you know, while he was driving, and eventually ended up in a treatment center. I mean, I tried doctors, I tried counselors, I tried many ways to control my drinking, many ways to control my behavior, and it all just availed me nothing, got me nowhere, and so I went into this treatment facility. I went in there a miserable suicidal alcoholic, and a few weeks later I emerged a miserable suicidal amateur psychiatrist. And I came out and they said to me, go to meetings, you need to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I started going to meetings, and I, you know, believe me, I mean, the blackouts, and I was at rock bottom. You know, I desperately needed to do something, and I went to meetings, you know, and I would go to meetings most nights of the week. And every meeting I would share, and I would whine, and I would moan, and I would bleat, and I would blame the world for my problems. It was everybody else's fault. Sometimes I'd be in a meeting and I would conjure up a tear, and I'd cry, and I'd say, after the meeting I'm going to jump off the bridge, you know, all this sort of stuff. And you know, people would come up to me and they'd say, Wayne, that was a great share, gut level honesty. And I would just get back to my bedsit, and it was just that turmoil, and that inner conflict just ripped me to pieces, and I was getting nowhere. This is how bad it got for me in Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, my best mate at the time, American Jim, we're walking down North Hill, and he said, look, Wayne, he said, my sponsors told me to stay away from you because you're a bad influence. You're a bad example. That's how bad just coming to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous was doing for me. That's how bad it was getting. AA was not working. After that rock bottom, when I was just forced to go into treatment, 11 weeks later, after having absolutely no control once I'd started drinking, 11 weeks later, going to all these meetings and sharing all this nonsense, I was sat at home one night, I had a bottle of vodka, and I sat there and I thought, 11 weeks. I'm surely not as bad as those people at the meeting. You know, there's a bottle of vodka right there. I feel comfortable. I feel relaxed. You know, I'm not. It's fine. You know, I cannot be like those people. Surely, if I was an alcoholic, I'd be frothing at the mouth and it'd be unbearable. But I feel comfortable, so I took a drink. I mean, that is insanity. You know, when I honestly wanted to, I could not quit entirely. And once I started, I had little control over the amount that I took. You know, I was an alcoholic, and more chaos and mayhem ensued. And I eventually, this is the thing, there's a lot of people here tonight, you know, if you're like me, and there probably are a lot of you that are like me, you know, it's possible to sit in the middle of the best group in the world, week in, week out, for years. But if I do not take the 12 steps, my life will get progressively and systematically worse over a prolonged period of time. I need to take the 12 steps, and to do that, I need a sponsor. And I got lucky for the first time in Alcoholics Anonymous. I turned up at the wrong meeting, and there were people there who were different. You know, these guys were excited, and they were enthusiastic about Alcoholics Anonymous. They spoke with conviction. They had a purpose and direction. You know, they were just firing it on, same again, again, again. Big book, sponsor steps, big book, sponsor steps. And I loved it. You know, I wanted and I needed what those folks had. And they told me precisely what I needed to do. And they really, they just wiped the floor with me and they hung me out to dry. You know, if I wanted to recover, if I wanted this more than anything else, this is the fourth person to say this, I was told, just shut up because you know jack shit about living sober and we do. If you want what we've got, shut up and do what we've done. And they were all saying get a sponsor. And I got my first long-term sponsor, and I remember I'd ring this guy up and I would call him, and I'd say, oh God, it's happened again. He said, well, he's like, well, bless you, lad, it's a deeply moving story. Have you read your big book today? I ring him up the next week. I say, well, oh no, guess what now? And he said, well, bless you, lad, your story's touched me deeply. Go and work with a newcomer. Well, this guy just isn't listening to me. You know, he doesn't like me. But, you know, I see now he liked me a lot. He cared deeply how I felt. But he just wanted me to take the right actions, the actions which changes a twisted soul like myself so that I can live comfortably without alcohol. And one day, I was really pestering the wife. I was up all night, and the next morning I felt terrible. I thought, oh, no, how's this going to go? I remember ringing him up and I, oh God, David. And he said, well, bless you, lad. If you're honest with me, I'm on your side. And that's the deal I make with people I sponsor. If you're honest with me, I'm on your side. And, you know, what an amazing feeling that was. And David, he eventually, my sponsor died and I had to get another sponsor. And fortunately, I was sponsoring a guy who, he'd just come back from the World Convention. He came back with a, misery is, no, the you no longer alone sign. He came back with a new girlfriend and a box of tapes. And he said, look, Wayne, you got to listen to these tapes. I said, I'm not interested in tapes. I mean, I'm probably the only person here that doesn't listen to Bob D. But he said, you got to listen to these tapes. And, okay. So eventually I listened to this tape. He said, if nothing else, listen to this one old guy. And I could not believe it. I started listening to this guy, and he described how in his area he was accused of being a dictator-type sponsor, and that he was accused of having a group in California full of AA stormtroopers. I thought, wow. I thought, he's got to sponsor me. So I called him, and what he said to me was, yep, everybody in this world needs somebody to fulfill that role, and I will fulfill that role. And so Clancy started sponsoring me, but it was 20 years ago. And he said call him every week, so I called him every week. I mean, I didn't even know what he looked like, but I called this guy every week. I called my sponsor every week. I emailed him once a week. 6 months later, it was my moment. He was in England. He was at the meeting. Somebody said, he's over there. And so I thought, great, I'm going to introduce myself to my sponsor. And I goes up to him and I says, hi, I'm Wayne. I'm Wayne. You sponsor me. I've called you every week for 6 months. He just looked at me. He put two hands on my head and said, you will never drink again, kid. And off he went. That was the end of that. That was the end of that. Now, I would have been forgiven. I'd be forgiven for thinking, to screw you, I'm not putting up with that. Because I didn't put up with any, I'd brought no control from man or God. I would try and protect my inner integrity till my dying breath. I would not be told, and I wouldn't take that shit. But by the time I got to my seat, which is the back row away, I'd processed this all in my mind. There's perhaps not another living soul in the world who I will listen to right now. This is working for me. You know, I do not need to be frivolous in pally-pally with my sponsor. I just need to listen to my sponsor. That's all that is required. Because all that ever happened, and this will happen to many people in this room, perhaps some tonight, is somebody would say something I didn't like, something would happen, and resentment and fear would jump to the defense of my ego. And it kept my life in a perpetual cycle of insanity. And I kept getting worse and worse and going around and around. So for the first time in my life, I just took it and I just kept on marching. And the best story, I mean, sponsorship figures a lot in my share because it's been one of the things which has kept me marching the road. And one of the best readings I've ever seen on sponsorship has nothing to do with sponsorship, but it sums sponsorship up brilliantly. It's a long-winded story, but I like it. It's Bill Wilson was in the New York clubhouse, and he'd had a hard day. And he sat on his bed at the end of the day. Lois, his wife, is away. And he says, I could hear the rain coming down on the old tin roof. You can just imagine this 1930s New York clubhouse. I just got this image of all the neon signs reflecting in the puddles. Just a great atmosphere. It's probably nothing like that, but that's what I got in my mind. And he was in there, and he gets a knock on the door. The janitor says, look, Bill, there's another one's turned up. Do you want me to send him away? Bill says, no, let him in. Let him in. So here's this guy walking down the corridor, and he said, wow, this guy's really struggling. He's laboring. He's clearly in a bad way, this guy. So he opens the door, and he says, I saw this guy there with a long black coat and a hat and a scarf. He took his scarf off, and I could see a clerical collar. He says, the guy just radiated a grace. There was something about his eyes, a presence. And he sat down. I'll give him 15 minutes. And that 15-minute conversation was the second conversation in AA history, which lasted a lifetime. That guy was Father Edward Dowling, who became Bill's spiritual sponsor. Now, the reason I tell that story is that Edward Dowling, the Jesuit priest, it's well known that he suffered physically terribly. He had chronic arthritis, and he was a man who was in a lot of pain, which is why he was laboring down the hallway. And but Ed Dowling said he was in New York, and he said, I was watching some ice skaters. He said they were gliding across the ice with so much grace, they made me feel like I could do the same. And that's what my sponsor did for me. When I just did not believe I could have what I saw in the people around me, when I just did not believe that this was going to work, when you people were just cleverer than me, you were smarter than me, and I just couldn't do this, my sponsor made me feel like I could do the same. You know, I could have this. If I wanted it first above all else, I could have what I saw in you people. And that has proved to be the, and you can have it as well. And that has proved to be the case. Because, you know, for somebody, because I need sponsor. I don't need a sponsor. I need to be sponsored, and there's a big difference. You know, having a sponsor in name is pointless. I need to allow myself to be sponsored. And by the way, I only sponsor old grannies now. It's just a private rule. They've got to be old boots and old grannies. That one got in. But so that for me is sponsorship. That just sums up sponsorship. And because if you're like me, you know, when I don't allow myself to be sponsored, it's like being sponsored by a magic mirror. You know, mirror, mirror on the wall, who is the greatest of them all? And the problem when I live like that is this is how it goes. See, you're right, Clancy. I've met this woman. It just feels right. Don't do it, kid. Keep away, kid. A world of pain. Don't do it. The people who love you will hate it, and the people who hate you will love it. Just keep away. Don't do it. And I think, wow. So I go indoors. I think, okay. Look, God, if you don't want me to see this woman, just give me a sign. And all of a sudden, the pictures on the wall start spinning around. You know, the window, the curtains are blowing in and out. You know, there's big cracks in the wall, dust in the chandeliers are spinning around. And it goes quiet, and all of a sudden, I'm stood there. And it goes, just any old sign. You know? You know, mirror, mirror on the wall, who is the greatest of them all? And when I live like that, that broad and bright highway that I once hop, skipped, and danced along becomes narrower and narrower and darker until eventually it becomes a cold, dark tunnel. And the only thing you see is the glow-in-the-dark AA ejector cord. Just get me out of here. Just get me away from those people. I can't face them anymore. But you live by structure. You call your sponsor. See? He said, yep, kid, you're in the shit. He says, just get up, 2 steps to the left, 4 steps forward, call me again next week. So you get up, 5 steps forward, bang your head again. And the glow-in-the-dark ejector cord is still there. Just run, just get me away. You can hear people on the outside of the tunnel just shouting in stupid information like, you know, there's plenty of fish in the sea, or buy a pair of skinny jeans, you know. Jesus, just... You call your sponsor again. He says, okay, kid, you get in there, just... stand up, 4 steps forward, jump, and keep your head down. So you get up, 4 steps forward, you jump, you keep your head down. And slowly over time, by taking the right actions, things begin to brighten up. And you learn a lesson of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're like me, nothing improves with time. It's more useless information people give to you here. Just give it time. You know, I come to meetings for years, just giving it time. It's dependent on what I do with the time. I have to take the actions of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have to do the things which changes a wretch like myself to somebody that can live comfortably without alcohol. You know, so it's just to keep taking the actions. And, you know, Bill Wilson is just an absolutely incredible example of that. Another long-winded, well, not quite as long-winded, another story. It's, again, it talks about in AA comes of age. You know, Bill Wilson, another long, hard day, and he comes home from work, and he actually says, I was sore. He was pissed off. He actually says, I was in far from spiritual mood. You know, just imagine that. In far from spiritual mood. I mean, you got a resentment, so you don't want to come to the meeting, or something. In far from spiritual mood. He sat down with a bit of paper and a pen. Half an hour later, he'd wrote the 12 steps. Wow. How's that for service whilst in far from spiritual mood? So you see, it doesn't matter how how bad I feel, it doesn't matter what is going on around me, I just got to continue to take the actions of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I'm not responsible for the results. I just got to keep taking the actions. And I got this, I'm really crazy about the military. I love the military. And I, never in the military, I just fascinated with it. Because I watch all the, especially at the moment, you see all these stories, all these of just heroism. You think, wow, bravery and courage and people in dangerous situations. How do they do that? You know, how have they done that? And usually, or very often, right at the bottom of the article or the end of the interview, they get asked that same thing. How did you do that? And the answer very often is, we trusted in our training. That's what we do here. When all hell breaks loose, when we think our AA world is just falling apart, when everything is just going against us and it just feels like we're going to be overcome, we just trust in our training. We just do those very simple daily actions that we were given on day one. And if we do that, you know, we get through, and you know, we continue to have. That's how old timers become old timers. Old timers become old timers, not because they're perfect and they caught the big book. Old timers are old timers because they got through all sorts of things by just continuing to take the actions. And I mean, I had the privilege of meeting and photographing a famous member of the SAS, and I said to him, "How important is your training?" And he said to me, "Repetition, repetition, repetition. It's only when we've mastered the basics that we are in a position to make those life-saving choices." Now, you know, we don't rise to the occasion. We sink to the level of our training. So I had to get, that's why my sponsor tried to get me into good habits early. He just tried to get me to do those things which seemed irrelevant to the problem. You know, the problem was always over here. And the solution he gave me was over there. But I took those irrelevant actions and my outlook brightened up. And from being in that place of despair, I saw that I could actually live sober and actually enjoy sobriety. And you know, that is what is on offer here. You know, if you're new, just get a sponsor, somebody you're going to listen to. You know, take the actions of Alcoholics Anonymous. And don't leave. You know, there's a lovely saying. It says, you know, when the white winds blow and the snows fall, the lone wolf dies, but the pack survives. You know, just stick to the game plan. Stick with your home group. Just keep coming and just keep doing these things which changes us. You know, we're encouraged to grow spiritually. I mean, that's another thing. I mean, when I turn up, I remember, I just cringed. It made me want to throw up. You know, I'd hear people with, you know, it just conjured up images of people with tambourines, all this spiritual stuff. And, you know, but for me, I mean, I've been sober for 33, coming on 34 years. And, you know, I started doing the daily plan and all those actions very early on, you know, within the first sort of 6 months. You know, so this has worked for me. But for somebody like myself, to grow spiritually, because you know we all like to feel spiritual. You know, Steve, as the afternoon off work, you know, we like to feel spiritual. You know, I don't want to share unless I feel spiritual. That's another one we hear. You know, I don't want to share. I don't want to do the things that makes me, you know, unless I feel spiritual. And you know, that's not necessarily reading a pile of spiritual books, praying hours and hours a day. That is not necessarily how I'm going to grow spiritually. You know, were the work, it says through work and self-sacrifice for others. If I did not work, I would surely drink, and if I drank, I would surely die. You know, so where is the work? The real work for somebody like me is when I'm in a place where there are people with different political views, when I'm in a place where there are people with different religious views, when I'm in a place where there are people who have been sober a day, people who have been sober a decade, people who are popular, people who are unpopular, when there are just all sorts of people, am I able to be patient, kind, tolerant, loving, and understanding? That takes work. But there is one special place in the world where flawed and imperfect alcoholics gather to at least begin to practice those principles. And tonight, that place is called the Road to Recovery Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. So all we do, we turn up regardless, we try to do the best we can, we try to help people, just try to be the best example that we can be. That's not always a very good example. We just do the best we can, and we just patiently try to correct and improve, keep trying to help people, and just keep marching. And if you do that, you'll have a truly incredible life. I've had a wonderful life. I've had so many good things. Speaking to Ree on the way in, and you know, I'm blessed to be, you know, just, you know, I'm just so happy with my life. You know, and there was a time when that would, you know, that was not the case. You know, the constant thoughts of suicide. So just regardless of your current circumstances, do what we have done, and you will find a remarkable life. And happy birthday, Road to Recovery. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your share, Wayne.